This episode is going to cover some tips on how to better use every landscape photographer's favorite lens, the wide angle. Hey, what is going on, everybody? It's your host, Austin James Jackson. Welcome back to the Learn Landscape Photography Podcast. I am stoked you guys are here, like always. Really hope this episode is going to be helpful for you guys. In this episode, we're talking about some tips for using the wide angle lens. Now, for most of you landscape photographers out there, I'm guessing it's your favorite lens. And to be honest, I love my wide angle lens when I'm capturing some fantastic light. It is so cool to be able to include so much in your scene. And the wide angle lens has been a popular for landscape photographers for decades. It's by far the most popular lens because of its ability to capture so much in the scene. Now, this also comes with a drawback because you don't always want to capture more in the scene. So we're going to talk about a few tips regarding maybe when you should and shouldn't use a wide angle and just some other tips that I have that I've generally found from shooting a wide angle. These are going to be hopefully some maybe outside of the box tips. They're not going to be things like make sure your shutter speed's correct, because I'm assuming if you're listening to that, you already somewhat understand that a little bit. So I really hope this episode is going to be helpful for you guys. Right now, I've got written down 6 tips that I want to cover. I may come up with more as we go, so it may end up being more than 6. But otherwise, I have 6 as it stands right now. So let's go ahead and jump in there and let's talk about my 6 tips for using your wide angle lens. Tip number 1 when it comes to using a wide angle lens is to not use a wide angle lens all the time. Now, that might seem a little counterintuitive, but I notice a lot of photographers make the mistake of getting married to their wide angle lens and it never leaves their camera. Every scene they approach, they're looking for the wide scene no matter what. Now, that's great. If you can get really fantastic light, the wide angle lens is absolutely your friend to capture it all. However, the best part about the wide angle lens is also the biggest drawback, which is when you shoot wide, you include a lot in the scene. That can be good or it can be really bad. The more you include in the scene, the more elements there are in your image. So your image can get really busy in a hurry. Go into the forest using your 16 to 35 millimeter lens. You will see what I mean when there's, you know, plants everywhere and different colors and different branches and leaves and all that sticking out. Things get busy in a hurry, and that is probably, like, there could be a lot of things, but probably one of the biggest things holding you back from taking better photos is that you don't understand how to simplify your scene. And a wide angle lens is the most difficult lens to use to simplify the scene. So it can be one of the most difficult lenses to capture great photos with. Keep in mind, everything in your frame should be there for a reason. It's so important that I'll say it twice. Every single thing in your frame should be there for a reason. If it doesn't add to the scene, it takes away from it. There's nothing that is neutral to a scene, in my opinion. Everything either adds to it or it takes away. Now, a lot of times, something like negative space or empty space or something that's not very detailed, you might think that, oh, that's just neutral. It doesn't help or it doesn't hurt, but it actually helps. When you can kind of make that subject stand out by decreasing the amount of clutter in the scene, that helps. Everything should be there for a reason. So the other thing that I tell people frequently is don't include something in your frame that is not interesting. I think as landscape photographers, a lot of times we get caught with our tail between our legs. We go out to shoot. We hope that it's going to be a great sunset and ends up being totally clear, or it's totally gray and cloudy. And we leave the wide angle lens on shooting the same scene that we were going to shoot if there was a great sunset. If you are shooting the exact same image in a boring sunset that you'd be shooting for an exciting sunset, that is a problem if you want to capture portfolio worthy images. Look, I totally understand a lot of people out there. You might be like, you know, I'm going to this place, you know, I'm in, say I'm going to Yosemite and I just want to capture a photo of the valley and I just want to capture the wide angle just so I have it to say I've been there. That's totally fine. But if you do want to capture those images that are portfolio worthy, you have to look past the wide angle lens in subpar conditions. The wide angle lens really thrives when you have crazy conditions. You have light rays, you have great sunset, you have cool lightning, cool storm clouds, something like that. It does not excel in clear skies or totally cloudy skies with boring clouds. Instead, you should look to something like a telephoto lens in those situations because, again, only capture what is interesting in your scene. That sounds really obvious, but it amazes me how many photographers don't understand the concept of just capturing what's interesting and leaving out everything that is uninteresting. So that's a really long-winded way of explaining the first tip there to only shoot super wide in excellent light conditions. But that is probably the biggest tip I have for using a wide angle is to only use it when you really need it. Don't just throw it on and try and find a wide angle composition for every scene because some scenes just don't have a great wide angle shot. Now let's jump into tip number two, which is to understand wide angle distortion. Essentially what this means, and you can test this if you don't believe me, go outside, use your widest lens, like 14 or 16. You won't see this as much once you get up to like 24 or 35, but you know, if you've got some 14, 16, 18 millimeter range, go outside and frame out something in the distance. Let's just say a tree or a mountain or something. Put your subject in the center of the frame, take a photo, then put your subject at the very top or one of the edges of the frame and take another photo. Now bring those photos into the computer, compare those two images, and you will notice on the image where your subject was on the top or the edge of the frame, it's much taller or bigger because it's stretched. When it's in the middle, it's shorter and fatter. So understand that with a wide angle, there's a little bit of distortion. Even if you use the profile corrections in post-processing, you're still going to have that wide angle distortion. So think about how the placement of your subject in the frame can make a subject bigger, smaller, taller, fatter. Think about using that to your advantage. One of the most, I guess, traditional ways of shooting like a landscape photo that a lot of people like to use is mountain, wildflowers, and good sunset. So you've got your good flowers in the foreground, they're on the bottom of your frame. Now you have the choice of either putting the mountain right in the middle of your frame or at the top. You'll want to put the mountain at the top if at all possible because you will have that mountain will be stretched a little bit. It'll look more impressive than if it's in the middle. Some lenses are worse than others. And yes, you can use post-processing to just do this yourself, but do keep it in mind and be aware of that, that when you're using a wide angle lens and you put your subject in the middle, it's going to make that subject smaller, shorter, fatter, just a lot more boring. So keep that in mind. You don't always have to think about it and use it to your advantage, but you always want to have it in the back of your mind to know what exactly is going on with your images, in my opinion. Now, tip number three is regarding filters. If you need filters, which you probably do, but you probably don't need as many as you think, get high quality filters because those are generally going to be thinner. Thin is very important when it comes to filters and your wide angle lens. If you've got a thick filter, and when I'm saying thin or thick, I mean the like if you grab a filter and you hold it sideways, the depth that the filter takes up, some of the cheaper filters, like you go on Amazon and you buy a $15 special, those filters are thick. And not the glass, the black part, the part that goes around that holds the glass, the frame, I guess would be the word for it, is thick. Now, if you're shooting on a wide angle lens, the problem is you're going to see some vignetting because your lens is capturing that space that now your filter is taking up. Generally, the more expensive filters are going to be a little thinner and they're going to be, it's just always good advice to buy a quality filter because, I mean, you're using a, you know, $2,000-$4,000 camera with a $1,000-$3,000 lens in front of it. Don't put a $15 piece of glass in front of it and totally degrade your image quality. And since I mentioned it at the beginning of this tip, when it comes to filters, honestly, all you need is a polarizer, and you can get an ND filter if you like, but I personally don't really use them for landscape photography. Most people use them for water, but I think that water looks not that great when you open up that shutter speed too far. So I just use a polarizer. You can get a UV filter to protect your lens if you want as well. But keep in mind, if you put a UV filter on your wide angle lens and you stack that with another thing like a polarizer or an ND filter, that adds to the depth that it stands off of the lens, which may produce some vignetting on the side. This isn't a huge deal. You can crop it out, but it is, if you're planning on cropping it out like that, it's essentially taking maybe your 14 or 16 millimeter lens and making that a 16 or an 18 millimeter lens. So it's reducing your wideness a little bit if that is what you're doing. I want to take a break from today's episode and talk about a really cool opportunity if you are a beginner or intermediate photographer that is really serious about taking better photos and getting better at photography. Now, usually about 4 to 6 times a year, I teach in-person workshops around the Western United States centered around helping you become a better photographer. Now, my workshops are kept to just 5 people, which means that you will get plenty of one-on-one attention. So regardless of your skill level, whether you just picked up your first camera or whether you've been shooting for 15 years, I promise you, you're going to get so much out of it. I'm going to cater the class directly to you. Best of all, after the workshop, I'm going to add you to my alumni group on Facebook, where you can get literally weekly image feedback. We can connect at all times. When the workshop is over, it's not done. I'm still going to be your mentor. I'm going to be there to help you and become better at photography. Now, like I said, if you're serious about becoming better at photography, don't wait any longer. Register for one of my workshops this year. You can visit austinjamesjackson.com/workshops. That link will be down below in the podcast description that you can click on as well. I really can't wait to see you guys out there. So one thing I think that a lot of people struggle to understand is that when you're using a wide angle, you have to get close to your subject. Everything is really, really tiny with a wide angle lens if your subject is far away. Generally speaking, and not always, you want to be pretty close to something if you're using a wide angle lens. If you're set up on a tripod far away from everything that you're shooting, it generally isn't going to produce that exciting of an image. So you want to get close because everything looks so small. Or just shoot things that are huge if they're far away, like mountains. And, here in Utah, one thing I like to try and do is if I can find like an interesting tree or a rock or something in the foreground, I get pretty close to that. And behind it, I'll have another subject, whether that's a bigger mountain or a bigger rock or something. But just understand that you need to get really close to your subject when you're using that wide angle lens. This leads in really well to my 5th tip, because that tip is to get low, but not too low to your subject. Generally speaking, with a wide angle lens, having your tripod fully extended all the way up is probably not the best place to be. You probably don't want to be shooting with your wide angle at eye level. Usually you want to get low. Now, not always. This isn't like a set in stone rule, but usually you will want to get low, but not too low, which I know is like not super helpful for me to tell you get low, but not too low. But I would say you need to understand the limitations. If you go too low, like I've seen some photographers that get so low to their subject, which is cool because like things overlap and you have this like crazy cool foreground. But if you get really low and your foreground, like say you have flowers in the foreground, if what is right behind those flowers on your image is something that's background that's 30 feet further back, it is going to be a huge pain in your butt to do a focus stack or other blending techniques. So for that reason, I always say to know your limitations and know the camera's limitations. And it's hard to like for me to teach you that. The best way is just like get out and shoot as much as you can, but know what's going to look good and what maybe isn't going to look good in terms of how low you should get. Generally speaking, like I've seen some people that like really obsess over getting low, like people that are taking out the center column on their tripod and they're getting their tripod so it's like a half an inch off the ground. usually that's going to be too low. Like, to be honest with you, and some people have captured some great images that way. Me personally, I generally never capture anything where I need to be lower than having my tripod where none of the legs are extended, but they're open just at their regular angle. So on like my little tripod, that's probably like 2 feet or a foot and a half, maybe 16, 18 inches. I generally don't find scenes that need to be lower than that. As you go lower, even though you might get closer to your foreground, understand that there is no mid-ground, and mid-ground serves a purpose in your images. You don't want your like foreground to directly overlap your subject or your background in the scene. A little bit of mid-ground is nice, but finding that nice balance where there's just enough mid-ground to kind of make the image look right versus not too much mid-ground that's boring, that has nothing going on, is a balance that you'll have to play with as you go through your photography journey. So it's definitely something that is hard to nail, especially if you're newer. Regarding this tip, I would say also to don't let the foreground take away from the background. I've seen a lot of images, and like I said, all the advice I give on this podcast and everywhere else is just my personal opinion. And it's not, doesn't necessarily mean that it's right or that it's wrong. But my personal opinion is I've seen a lot of photos online where you have a photographer that is so obsessed with the foreground, and the foreground actually takes away from the background because the foreground screams at you so loud. Like I mentioned before, everything in your frame should be there for a reason. Everything should add. If it doesn't add to the image, it takes away from the image. And a lot of times negative space or things that aren't as interesting add to the image by reducing the clutter. A lot of times just by having like a foreground that is so busy, so much going on, and then having a background or a subject that's the same way, it's like there's too much to process. There's too much screaming at you and people's brains will tune out. There's a nice balance of having interest in your scene, but not something that's too visually busy, that I think you're walking the fine line. Again, it's something where there's not a formula that I can tell you this is too much and this is not enough. It's something that you'll play with and develop your own style as a photographer. But that is one thing that I end up seeing a lot as photographers that just have too much foreground that screams at you. And a lot of times it's not even the foreground that they picked. It's more just the way they framed it out. They got way too close or way too low to the foreground. So it takes up too much real estate in your frame. So that's kind of my two cents on getting low, but not too low to your subject. Now, the sixth and final tip here is just a good photography tip in general, but I find it especially useful with the wide angle lens. That is to look for natural contrast in the scene. I've talked about this in a few different YouTube videos and maybe even the podcast before, but natural contrast is so important for compelling images. Look at any of your favorite photographers' images, and I am going to bet that most of their images have good natural contrast. What I mean by natural contrast is this is not you sliding the contrast slider in Lightroom to plus 100. This is contrast that exists in the scene naturally. Generally, this is going to be in luminosity values, but it can also be in color or it can be in both. Now, a good example of this, if you go on my website, like there's a very large percentage of my photos that have a very, very strong natural contrast. It's something that I'm really drawn to. Again, it doesn't necessarily mean that it's right. It doesn't necessarily mean that it's better. It's just my personal opinion. But look for those images where, you know, you might have a subject or a foreground part of your image that intersects the sky, at least here in Utah. So one example that I'm thinking of is I have like multiple photos where there's like rock hoodoos, and I let those rocks bleed into the sky. I do it for night photos, do it for daytime photos, especially important for nighttime photos, but it's important for both. And by having that natural contrast, it makes the scene a little bit, in my opinion, more pleasing to the eye. It looks a little bit better. And a lot of times this can look like, you know, finding a tree branch that, or like a tree, a full tree that sticks into the sky. I mean, this can look like a lot of things. Even another great example here, I guess, of a time where I'm not using the sky. The sky is a really easy way to create natural contrast because it's bright and the foreground is always going to be dark or a different color. But when you don't have the sky, you know, a lot of times I think about, you know, we shoot in Capitol Reef on my workshop and there's always some really nice trees. Like earlier this spring, we shot a little bit outside Capitol Reef towards Hanksville, and there's all these trees that are like blooming green. The leaves are just coming out right now in the spring. And behind those trees, we line it up so there's like a nice orange canyon wall. We're creating natural contrast between the leaves of the trees, which are green, and the canyon wall, which is orange. The luminosity value is pretty much the same. They're the same brightness, but we're creating that natural contrast by making the background the orange wall. Now, is the orange wall important to the scene in terms of, is it exciting or a subject in itself? No, the wall is not that exciting. The tree is the subject. But by having the wall in the background, it creates a better natural contrast than if I was to shoot the tree from the other side and have the background be, you know, just desert, like just ground, dirt. The natural contrast wouldn't be quite as well. Now, when you can combine these things together to create a natural contrast of things that are visually appealing, like a beautiful tree and a beautiful orange canyon wall, neither of which stands all that exciting on its own, but together is really how you can create that really, really nice photo. So natural contrast is so, so important. I hate to always give desert examples because I know a lot of you guys aren't desert people, but like mountains, we can talk about mountains. You know, you have flowers in the foreground. And maybe those flowers are a different color than what's around it. You know, you've got yellow flowers, you've got green shrubbery, and you've got a mountain in the background. There's lots of natural contrast there because the mountain contrasts with the sky behind it. The flowers contrast with the greenery behind it. So there's so many different ways to create natural contrast, but you should always, always, always be looking for natural contrast in your scene. It's one of the most important things. And it's especially important when using a wide angle because, again, to kind of loop this whole episode back together, with the wide angle, you have a hard time distinguishing or, I guess, what's the word I'm looking for here? You don't want to include anything that's not interesting. So wide angle scenes get busy really quickly because they have distracting elements. By using natural contrast, you can help to reduce those distracting elements, and you can help reduce the busyness and kind of simplify the scene. The more you can simplify the scene, I think the better the image is going to be. That's why I like the traditional nice sunset with a reflection that reflects perfectly, mountain and a lake. That's why that sunset shot works, because it's simple, it's simplified, it's easy to look at, and it's beautiful. Simplification is the key here, my friends. Sorry to go off on a little bit of tangent, but that pretty much marks my sixth and final tip of always looking for natural contrast in your scenes. Hey, well, thank you guys so much for listening. I apologize because I feel like all of these solo podcast episodes the last month or two have just been like tips for this, tips for that, tips for this, tips for that. But that being said, you guys seem to be, at least people are downloading the episodes. The podcast is hard to get feedback on if the episodes are good or not unless you guys email me. But these tips type of episodes seem to do very well. And I'm hoping that they're helpful for you in order to kind of get some advice on some common landscape photography techniques. I don't have the next solo episode planned out yet, but I'm already thinking about what kind of tips can I give you for that one. So I apologize in advance. Now, lastly, because I've been notified by a few people on a few different channels that you guys don't all know that I exist elsewhere other than my particular channel that you're watching on. Obviously, you're listening to the podcast now. I would appreciate it, and I think you will find it helpful if you check me out on YouTube and Instagram or TikTok if you're inclined. YouTube, Austin James Jackson Photography, I think, or it's Austin James Jackson. Either way, search either one. I should be the chump that shows up. On YouTube, I'm posting a long form video per week, one per week. It's on Saturdays. And I talk about, you know, whatever tip, or sometimes I do gear reviews. Sometimes I do tutorials. Other times I do like, here's some tips for this, or sometimes post-processing tutorials. That's a nice way if you're a visual learner, because I can actually show you some stuff as opposed to the podcast where you're just listening to me. On the YouTube, obviously you're watching it as well. I also post short videos on YouTube, on Instagram, and on TikTok. I engage a little bit more with people on Instagram, austin.james.jackson, or Austin period James period Jackson. It's where you can find me on Instagram. If you have Instagram, I'd recommend following me there over TikTok. It's hard for me to keep up with TikTok and engage with everybody on there, but I will engage more on Instagram. So we've got that. Obviously, you're listening to the Learn Landscape Photography podcast. And then, of course, I have my website, austinjamesjackson.com. I don't have a ton of super helpful stuff up on the website unless you're looking to take a workshop. But as you heard earlier, I've got kind of my workshops on the website, and you can sign up for a workshop there, which, like I've said before, I think it's the fast track to editing and taking better photos in the field. I don't want to sell you on that anymore, though. So again, hopefully those links are helpful. Follow me elsewhere. Email me if you have questions or feedback or anything like that. I always love hearing from you guys. And thank you again so much for listening to the podcast. Truly, truly appreciate your support. And we'll see you guys next time. So that is a wrap. Happy shooting out there, guys, and we will see you on the next episode.